Good morning. What a beautiful day. I want to welcome everyone to the First Parish Church of Stowe and Acton, a welcoming congregation. My name is Sharon Brownfield, and I serve as your vice president. Everyone is invited to coffee hour, and we have a special treat. We have leftover desserts from last night, which was awesome. And so please feel free to come. You'll be going out this door on my left. It goes down the hall, down the stairs to the elevator, and you'll see the fellowship hall. Child care is available during the service in the nursery, and if the need arises anytime during the service, please feel free to take your child there where they will be well cared for. And the nursery is located on the lower level of Fellowship Hall, which you get there the same way, and just we'll take one level down in the steps. We will have religious education today, and there's going to be more about that a little later. If this is the first time you're with us, we're very happy you're here. Please sign one of our guest books, which are located either in the vestry out front or, again, in the Fellowship Hall during coffee hour at the visitor's table. We can then put you on our mailing list so you can find out the activities that are going on. I would like to call your attention to the announcements, and do we have a packed announcements in our bulletin. This may be one of the bulletins you want to keep and take home because there's lots of information on it. We have two events. Let me first mention about the in-gathering potluck supper, which is happening September 22nd. Which is a great way to find, reconnect with friends and have new people come. Also, we have two other community building type events, which also are fundraisers. One is our apple pies, and there's a sign-up table in the Fellowship Hall, and there's lots of activity that you can do, from going out and getting our apples, which is great to do with kids, or going to peel apples on Thursday night, which is a way to do it. So feel free to look at that and sign up. The next is our fair, which is coming up, and it's our 150th anniversary of our fair. Can you imagine 150 years we've been doing fairs? And let me tell you, in 1902, we had a turkey dinner. I mean, really? It's amazing. So lots of activities going to be happening, donations and sign-ups. Again, it will be in the Fellowship Hall at our coffee table. The last announcement I'd like to make is Katie, when she sent out her summary of what the board talked about, mentioned that the board voted to support the youth-led climate strike, which is happening this Friday on September 20th. And the statement, and I'd like to read it. The Board of First Parish Church of Stowe and Acton unanimously support the global climate strike and related activities on September 20th through 27th. As Unitarian Universalists, we affirm our responsibility for the earth and the web of life in trust for this and future generations, and our responsibility to work for justice in our communities and in our world. A strike conveys a message that we have to start doing things differently. A strike is about disrupting the ordinary activities of business, government, education, and our own lives. We believe it's time to do things we otherwise would not do. The UUA and UU Mass Action have also supported and are coordinating activities around the strike. Today in the vestry after both services, particularly after this 11 o'clock service, our climate task force will be meeting to coordinate our activities, both those of us who will be going on to the strike and what we're going to be doing for this year. So all are invited to join us, and please do. And now I'll turn it over to Cindy.
And Sharon, if there are people who can't make it after the service today but want to join in with FPCers going to the climate strike on Friday, will there be an FPC announce going out about it that?
Sure. We'll have an FPC announce and people that you can contact, so because we're coordinating rides.
Great. Okay. Fabulous. I also wanted to draw your attention to one announcement in the order of service. We have a variety of adult religious education programs that the Adult Programs Committee has pulled together for you this year, and you're going to see a listing of those coming out sometime soon. And there's something every month this year. It's really a robust program that's been pulled together by that committee. The first program is the one in your order of service where on the white insert that says here, Desserts and Discussion, Islam and Sikhism. So Michelle and I have been working to come up with plans for three evenings. If this first one goes well, we'll have two more throughout the year, focused on different world religions. Because while the children and youth are discussing world religions this year, we know that adults are hungry for more information on world religions, too. So this first evening is designed to be sort of not just purely discussion and intellectual program, but also an artistic program and one we can connect to on the level of emotion and aesthetics as well. So we're going to have some discussion around what these world religions believe, but then also we're going to look at them through art and poetry, so particularly the art of Islamic art and Sikh poetry. And we're going to, my husband Peter will present on Islamic art, I'll present on Sikh poetry, Michelle will present on the world religions more globally and give you some background information, and then we'll have a lot of time just for discussion, how to connect these things to our principles, what things resonate with you, those kinds of discussions. So if you're interested, I'm not sure, we don't have a sign-up list yet, and you don't have to sign up to come, although we may circulate a sign-up list just to get a sense of who's coming and how many chairs to set up. But if you want to come, just show up, bring a dessert, not free, because the desserts and discussion, the desserts part happens from those of you who bring them. The discussion part is the part I bring. So I hope to see you that evening. And again, if it goes well, look for more like it throughout the year. Yeah. And Michelle is reminding me, childcare is provided. So don't let that be a deterrent for coming. Bring your kids. Free childcare is provided, not just child. Yeah, and it's something that we should say, that when we say here at FPC, childcare is provided, we generally always say free. If it weren't free, we would say so. But that's something for you to know, because sometimes we realize that about our concert we had the other weekend, that we didn't say free when it was free, because we just, like, most things are free here unless said otherwise. And we just sometimes forget that. So thank you for reminding me about that. I also want to draw your attention to the craftivism workshops in here. I'm really excited about those as a crafty person myself, too. That's going to be an ongoing series. It's going to go, if it takes off in the fall, we'll do it all year long. Thanks to Ami for leading those. And again, it's a drop-in thing. You don't have to sign up for it. So another one of those offerings this year. And that concludes my announcements today. Although pies, fair, it's 150th, this is a big thing. That's why we put three sheets of paper in here to tell you about it. So with no further ado, let me invite you to greet your neighbor. Good morning. Our opening words this morning come from Gretchen Haley. Come in, all who long to know how to love this world, how to keep eyes open, hands unclenched, arms wide, breathing deeply in and out. This is a time to practice, because there is still so much good and beauty and joy. But it can be hard to keep telling this tale with all the news and the wind and the rain and the trembling earth. Who wants to love this life anyway? Come in, all who teeter on this edge of cynicism. brokenhearted and trying to remember laughter and kindness and the chance to be alive in these days when so much is at stake. In this place, we remind each other why we persist, giving each other courage to take this path that is not always easy, to keep practicing this love that cannot, will not let us go, and still calls us on. Come, let us worship together. Can I ask if a member of the choir would like to light our chalice this morning? Anyone? Thank you, Susan. Our chalice is a symbol, and see, this is one of those things when Mike's not here, like he always does that. So I'm going to have to line people up to light the chalice every week. Our chalice is the symbol of the free faith of Unitarian Universalism, first used during World War II in Nazi-occupied Europe to mark safe houses, telling people that this was a place that you are welcome, you are safe, you are loved. I think it twists. Ah, there you go. And so we light our spirit, our chalice this morning in that spirit, that you are welcome, you are safe, you are loved. Please remain standing and join in our covenant and affirmation. Love is the spirit of this church and service its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. At the beginning of our year, starting last year, and then twice again throughout the year, because our religious education is in trimesters, we like to welcome and install our new teachers for the year. And to say a few more words about that, Michelle.
All right. So I started thinking recently about our RE program here. And RE program to many people means classes, and that is a really important piece of what we do, but we do a lot of other things. And Cindy's going to be referencing kaleidoscopes, and these are all my partner Lynette's kaleidoscopes, and so many of them are beautiful and different, but they all do one thing. They take lots of different designs, colors, pieces, and create beautiful designs with them. And all of those pieces in a kaleidoscope come together to create new and differing viewpoints of beauty. And I think about our RE program like that. There's the classes. There's our junior youth program, our senior youth program, our Club UU program, our coming of age program that begins today. All of those kind of work together and create all these moving parts that just come together and create this really awesome program that I think we have here. And with amazing kids that would be nice if they all put their phones down. Because there's no phones in church, they should all be on worship mode. And the only way that all of these programs run is by volunteers. We have paid staff. I'm here, and Paul Spanigal, our youth coordinator, is paid. And we have a child care coordinator that's paid. Other than that, if we didn't have volunteers stepping up, we would have no programs. So at this point, we're going to ask all of those people here that are teacher volunteers, youth group volunteers, Club UU volunteers, to RE committee. I really think those without them, we could not run our programs, to just step forward and bring your order of service, because we want to honor you. So even if you already came to the first service, please come again. So
as both a parent and someone who grew up in Unitarian Universalist religious education, I personally thank you, because I know that you are shepherding and working with the future of this faith and the future of the beloved community and love we wish to share in the world. So thank you so much for the work you do. We come together here today to install our teachers for this trimester and to celebrate the beginning of another year of learning together in our living tradition. We honor you for sharing your time and talents with our children and youth, knowing that their lives will be enriched by the time you spend with them.
As a learning community of all ages, we learn about and celebrate our Unitarian and Universalist faith, our Jewish and Christian heritages, world religions, and the work of social justice. We recognize the importance of each of you who volunteer in our religious education program. Much like the lantern that carries the light of our chalice to our RE program, you are each a light that guides our children and youth as they journey on their path of developing their own Unitarian Universalist faith. And in the order of service, if parents, children, and youth can join together right now,
we come today with trust and joy as our children and youth take their next steps on their religious education roadmap with you. Here our children and youth will learn about our religious heritage
and about the ways we interact with the world with love and justice and compassion.
We pledge to respect you, to learn from you, and to have fun with you. We know that we are also part of the teaching and learning community.
And then the teachers in the front.
We are grateful for the trust placed in us and for the opportunity to share our passions, our faith, our heritage, and our living tradition with the next generation, encouraging wonder and benefiting our universe towards love and justice.
And the in congregation, can you all join in?
We value that we are a learning community together. We pledge to be teachers and learners along with you as we create this beloved community. In gratitude, trust, respect, and support, we, the members and friends of the First Parish Church, Stowe and Acton, install you as our religious education teachers for this trimester with great rejoicing. So last week we honored our students with tokens to put on their backpacks so that they know that the love and blessings of FPC go with them all year long. We have some for you as teachers now, too, in this basket here. And so if you would just grab, it's right there on the into the pulpit, and pass it along. If you're someone who is teaching this year, this will be up here in the front, and you can feel free to take one as you exit. And that includes adult religious education teachers, too. So we
well
thank you.
As well as teachers in our community.
As well as teachers in our community, yes, of course. And so if we run out, I have more at home that I'll bring next week. And we'll keep on honoring teachers and students this year. And if you're a student who forgot to get one last week or wasn't here last week, I know you guys usually just scoot down the back stairs from there, but let us know. I'll bring these down to the youth after the service because I'm meeting with you then.
Thank you to all y'all. To y'all. All right, and at this part of our service, we typically carry our lantern, but we have no young children today, so I think we're just going to dismiss the high schoolers, and any other youth can just follow me on down. So enjoy your work in RE.
If you want to just take that basket down, you can. Yeah. Our words for prayer or meditation this morning come from Marjorie Bowens Wheatley and Clyde Grubbs. Marjorie Bowens Wheatley is an African American who was in our faith, and Clyde Grubbs is a Native American who's also a Unitarian Universalist, and they wrote this together. The road of history is long, full of both hope and disappointment. In times past, there have been wars and rumors of wars, violence and exploitation, hunger and homelessness, and destruction of this earth, your creation. We have become a global village with a growing realization of how fragile this earth is and how interconnected we are to each other and to all creation. We cannot continue to live in the old way. We must make a change, see a new way, a way towards peace with justice and a healthy planet. We pray. O great creative spirit, you have given a vision of the good, and we yearn for a new way. But where are we to find the courage to begin this work? We know that a different tomorrow is possible, but how can we build it? We think of the prophets, women and men, who voiced unpopular opinions, who made personal sacrifices, and sometimes lost their lives for the sake of justice. We think of Isaiah, who called out to let those who are held in captivity go free, to give solace to the poor and homeless. Let us be inspired by all those who work to overcome misery, poverty, and exploitation. We think of Harriet Tubman, who called out to people of goodwill to join her on an underground railroad to lift a dehumanized people from the bondage of slavery to the promise of freedom. Even when it meant challenging unjust laws, let us be inspired by those who are outlaws for freedom. We think of Gandhi, whose belief in soul force, the witness to love's truth, helped to overthrow the oppression of an empire and gave witness to the way of nonviolent action. Let us be inspired to become witnesses for peace. We think of Chief Seattle, who reminded us that we belong to the earth, not the earth to us. Let us be inspired by all those who work for the healing of creation, of Mother Earth and all her creatures. Who are the prophets who inspire you? They may be well known or known only to you, offering personal inspiration, courage, and hope. May they join in a great cloud of witnesses to a new way of life, the way of peace and justice, the way of justice lived according to the way of peace, the beloved community. So may it be. Blessed be, and amen. Our next hymn, the number is wrong in your order of service, but the title is correct. It's number 86, and it's Blessed Spirit of My Life. Please rise in body or in spirit. 100 years ago, the poet William Butler Yeats wrote, "Turning and turning in the widening gyre, the falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart, the center cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world." And 3 years later, T.S. Eliot would write in The Wasteland, "London Bridge is falling down, falling down, falling down, and these fragments I have shored against my ruins." The modernist poets and artists saw a world falling apart, a world fragmented. And so we see Picasso's paintings, which are pieces of faces cobbled back together again, but unrecognizable really as truly human in their fragmentation. We see the poets like E.E. Cummings arranging words like fragments of some unviewable whole, shards of meaning on a page. Gertrude Stein gives us cubist poetry, poetry that's trying to do with words what Picasso was doing with images. And the poet H.D. or Hilda Doolittle gives us imagistic poetry, just one slice, one brief shining image moment, one small slice of what that whole is that's impossible to perceive. The world was falling apart. The modernist poets were part of the lost generation. In the generational theory of Strauss and Howe, the generations cycle in a four-generation pattern. One generation is a hero generation, followed by an artist generation, followed by a prophet generation, followed by a nomad generation. So these modernist poets were part of the lost generation that was a nomad generation, which is what my generation, Generation X, is now. They were preceded by a prophet generation, like the baby boomers were prophets bringing the messages of liberation to a country that was steeped in white heterosexist normativeness. And the Generation X is followed, our cynicism is followed by a hero generation again, which is the millennials. Lost generation was followed by the GI generation, sometimes called the generation, the greatest generation, that would fight in World War II as they entered their young adulthood. So Strauss and Howe, in their book, The Fourth Turning, argue that not only do the generations go through this four-generation cycle of archetypes, our greater culture goes through a cycle of eras that each follow one of four archetypes as each generation comes of age, and that these cycle in patterns and are somewhat predictable. So these periods or eras, they call them turnings. And the first turning is the high turning, when institutions are strengthened. It's a good, upbeat time. The heroes are in their midlife then. Think about the GI generation in the 1950s, establishing civic order, strengthening institutions, governments, and voluntary institutions. Church volunteerism at an all-time high in that era. The second turning is an awakening period, when we get a lot of upheaval in the social era. The prophets, the baby boomers, coming into their young adulthood in the 1960s, that's the awakening era, social consciousness awakening to the problems that was there in the more stable but more hegemonous high time. And then the third turning is an unraveling. Institutions are weakened, the civic order decays, things feel like they're falling apart. Nomads like me are in our young adulthood. So think cynical Generation X in the era when the World Trade Center falls. And then we enter the fourth turning, an era of crisis. Heroes are in their young adulthood, nomads like myself in their midlife, prophets like our baby boomers entering their retirement years, artists like our young children in their childhood and teens. So back to 100 years ago. It was a time of unraveling as the lost generation came into their young adulthood. And it sure felt for them like things were falling apart and the world was unraveling. "Things fall apart, the center cannot hold," says Yeats. "These fragments I have shored against my ruins," says T.S. Eliot, the world is fragmenting apart. And then we entered the crisis, the fourth turning, the Great Depression and World War II. Periods of crisis are often periods of war and depression. Our earth created the Great Dust Bowl, and driving people from their homes into nomadic treks to seek a more fertile land. Unemployment forced migrations to wherever there was work. Fascism rose in the world and gave us Mussolini and Hitler. Genocide was committed as the world fell into crisis. Crisis. Our most recent unraveling period, according to this theory, began in the mid-1980s and continued until around 2005 when we entered the crisis period. The center could not hold, Strauss and Howe say of that time period, echoing the words of Yeats. The people who had, in the awakening, had comprised a silent majority of middle America, now felt themselves engulfed in Blade Runner chaos and variance. On race, for example, polls showed the Americans vastly overestimating the size and discontent of minorities and niche groups and underestimating the size and well-being of the majority. Fed by paranoia, public discourse became more tribal and less cordial with each passing year. By the early 1990s, America's niche group conflict came to be known as the culture wars. I think about the rise we've had then and since then of apocalyptic literature imagery in our film, our books, our TV shows, and how that is part of a world that feels like it's falling apart right now. It's hard not to look around us and see clearly that we are in a crisis. We are clearly, surely in a climate crisis and battling for our very earth right now. Like the last period of crisis where the earth groaned with the overfarming and gave us the dust bowls, this climate crisis too has driven people from their lands in search of a life where water and food are plentiful. We see the great migrations again this time, only this time they're global, and it's the whole earth that is groaning and suffering. And we're in a political crisis. The great unraveling left us fragmented, polarized, with little agreement across the divide from left to right in America and in this world. Fascism is again a force to be reckoned with, and a new alt-right has emerged in America that pushes back against the gains we made in our earlier age as a fundamentalism arose worldwide. Pushing back against the gains of anti-racism, feminism, LGBTQ rights, abortion rights, religious freedom, and more. The crisis era is all around us, turning and turning in the widening gyre. The falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart. The center cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. During this crisis age, what are we to do? What can we do? We articulate the old ideals and the new. We work to strengthen government and institutions and rebuild the safety net that's been torn apart that we need during this time of crisis. We work to bend the arc towards justice. We lead with love. In this great turning, we can learn to lead with love. In this time and in this place, our community dedicates itself to the work of rebuilding, the work of creating beloved community through the work we do in this church and through our support of other organizations like the Boys and Girls Club of Assabet Valley, which is our agency we support through our offering this month. So for that good work that we do and that they do, this morning's offering will now be gratefully received.
We shall be known by the one to serve and bring.
So here we are, in a land of fragments, in the crisis that came after the great unraveling. And we're doing the best we can, fighting this week for our planet, working to improve our government amidst unbelievable corruption and hypocrisy, reducing poverty where we can, protecting the rights we hold dear, creating peace in every corner possible. But the even better news than the fact that we keep striving is that the great next turning awaits. As the fourth turning closes and we move the wheel of time, we are headed to a new age and a high turning once again. Strauss and Howe predicted the next turning, or they predicted that this would happen in the mid-2020s. So we're not very far away. The millennials will be coming into their full power, and they are a hero generation, a generation of activists, a generation committed to believing in change that is possible, unlike the cynical Generation Xers that I represent. But not every cycle, not every period of crisis ends well. The first turnings that can follow can sometimes be restrictive ages as well. Looking back at how some crisis eras were resolved tells us a lot. The American Revolution was a crisis era. The status quo of a set of colonies of Britain was upended in the unraveling, and the crisis brought it to a head. It was followed by an era that represented an expanding new country where institutions were built that would shape this new land, but an era that continued many of the practices for a long period to come, the evils that this land was started with of slavery, and it increased the pushing back of Native Americans from this land and their ultimate genocide that was the Trail of Tears. The Civil War was the next crisis era, a fourth turning that featured a schism down our country and battles that left an overwhelming number of dead on our soil. And what followed in the first turning of the next era was the Reconstruction and the Gilded Age. Financial prosperity reigned in the North while the South struggled to recover. We had oil barons and rail barons on the rise, and also the rise of the KKK. The next great crisis period in our country was World War II. Again, we were in a literal war in our crisis period, a war against a rising fascism. And we triumphed in our crisis, and out of that came the 1950s, an era of economic stability where the GI Bill gave a generation education and affordable housing, and we saw the rise of the middle class like never before. We knew prosperity in America like never before. But we still had separate drinking fountains, and we still lacked voting rights, and the prosperity that was enjoyed by many was still denied to many as well. And so here we are again, right now, shoring the fragments against the ruins. We're in the crisis era, and we don't know what will come next. And so, of course, the answer is that we must work to shape what will come out of this crisis. Now is the time when we take those fragments of our era and we put them into a kaleidoscopic vision for the future of our country and our world, the future of our planet that we hold dear. In this era, we shifted from the modernism of the past century into postmodernism. And there's much about that shift that's possible, that's positive, and that made things possible in the ways it honors the experiences of different points of view. It cracked open the concept that what was normative was the experience of the majority, and allowed the facts that things are very different in experiences of minority cultures and populations to shine as true and real and valid like they never did before. But that fragmentation, that breaking of the paradigm of modernity that was postmodernity, left us fragmented and divided as a people. And so we have your point of view and my point of view. We have the left and the right unable to come together over the basic meaning of words sometimes. What must emerge must be something new, something that takes all these pieces and puts them together. I use the image of a kaleidoscope, but you could just as easily imagine a mosaic or stained glass window. We must learn to see that these fragments are part of something bigger that we are all in together, be it a great understanding of the universe or soul, or just this concept that we are all grounded in this earth that we walk upon. Turning and turning in the widening gyre, the falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart, the center cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world, said Yeats. But we do not need to be held by a center to not fall apart. Maybe that's the essential difference for this crisis era, different from the modernist crisis. And I know I'm a little bit lost in metaphors here, but hear me out. The modernists had to give way to the postmodern age. Their insistence on absolute truth gave way to a fragmented worldview that says truth is relative. And so we had things like the death of the author and the death of the text. My interpretation is as valid as your interpretation. I've been arguing postmodernism all week because this has real-world consequences. It has consequences for the work of justice. When we say that there's no longer an absolute truth, that you get to judge, one person, the normative view gets to judge about what's real, what's harmful, what was racist, etc. And we have to accept each person's experience as valid. It is a fragmented worldview, and it's all we have right now. But I see the possibility for an age coming that's post-postmodern, something better, where instead of just fragments, we see the larger whole that these fragments fit into. And it's no longer normative and held by a center that is accessible to only a few. It is something broadly shared, something where all these fragments are brought together into a shining, glorious, kaleidoscopic whole. It's the closest thing I have to a vision of what the next turning might mean. It means an America where we overcome divisions not by merging ourselves together into the melting pot, by seeing that we are beautiful in our diversity. And we get there no matter what your vision for the next great age may be after this era of crisis ultimately ends. We get there, and this I'm certain of, because we work together now in this time. We work together, we lead together, we hold out a vision of what is possible, we keep on moving forward. We get there by leading with love, as our choir sang. We get there by bending the arc towards justice. So this week, when we march for the future of our planet, we march because we are a people of faith. We strive for the era that is next to be a better one because we are a people of hope. We come together and build a better way because we are a people of love. The next turning may still be years away, but we are not waiting. We are building. We are planning. We are organizing, and we are coming together. And yes, we are marching in our kaleidoscopic vision for this better world to come. May it be so. Our closing hymn is number 1017, Building a New Way. Please rise in body or in spirit.
We are worthy.
Our closing words, words of benediction, come from Kimberly Debus with the words of Ecclesiastes. To everything there is a season, a time to listen, a time to be heard, a time to work, and a time to rest, a time to hold close, and a time to draw the circle wide, and always, always a time to love. Go in love, go in joy, go in peace.